Well, hello-a-roo. This is Peter Fitzgerald. Guess what time it is? That's right! It's time for Dave's Gone By for live audio reaming. Streaming.
There goes the Daverhood!
The guy David Lefkowitz is here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Welcome everybody on this September day to the 316th edition of Dave's Gone By. This is the second show that we're doing from our brand new location. As I guess those of you who heard the show last week finally got all the recounting of the details of why we weren't on for about 2 months or so, because I moved. I moved lock, stock, and barrel with my wife and our dogs from New York to Colorado, because my wife got a job out here, and so it's still a bit of getting acclimated and learning the ropes and, seeing the world a little bit differently, not from that eastern, hectic, New York-y, Long Island-y perspective, but still doing what I do and having a pretty great time out here. And we've done one episode of the show since we moved from New York. We did it about 2 weeks ago, and that's where I gave all my opinions and my thoughts on selling a house or trying to sell a house and move and pack up a pod and come to Greeley, Colorado, and all these kinds of things. The show is at my website, davesgoneby.org, if you want to hear it. Literally, last week, I wanted to do a fairly long segment about the move, about coming from New York to Colorado and all that stuff, and maybe take half an hour of the show, which, since we're doing them on the internet and then putting them on CD, we're generally doing the show 75 minutes now, which is kind of a nice, I think, perfect amount of time for it. Well, I started talking and I started giving my opinions and giving my thoughts and all the stories and all of what's been going on, of what it really takes to pack up and move a house and go most of the way across country. And by the time I literally looked at the clock, my half-hour segment had gone almost to an hour and taking up the vast majority of last week's program. I hope it wasn't too boring. I don't think it was boring, but I do tend to run on occasionally. But that's what this show is about. It's a mix of comedy and talk radio and music and interviews and sketches and all sorts of cool stuff. It's a little different every week. That's the point. And in case I didn't mention it, I'm Dave Lefkowitz. Hello. And I've been doing this program, Dave's Gone By, for almost 7 years. October will mark 7 years since we went on the air on a small Long Island radio station in October of 2002. But I'm recording this right now, this particular segment, because literally as we speak is 8 years to the day, to the moment of when the World Trade Center happened. People call it the World Trade Center event, the World Trade Center tragedy, which of course it was, but it was an attack. It always bothered me that literally days after the horrors occurred, people were putting a sort of correct spin on it so as not to offend who? The terrorists? So they would say the events, the tragedy of 9/11, as opposed to saying, no, the attack of 9/11, the terrorist nightmare of 9/11, which is really what it was and remains to this day. But I can't get on here and not mention, as I think I did a few years ago on this program, what, the old thing of where were you when? Well, thank God, I wasn't in New York City. I was on my way to work, as I guess so many people were, and it was about a quarter to nine in the morning, New York time. And I had previously been working in New York City, but our company, to save money, had not quite downsized, but they kept part of the staff in New York, the advertising people, because they're special, and they have to do all these, you know, expensive lunches in New York. So they could stay in the heart of Manhattan. That's fine. But they needed a place to put the rest of us. It was a magazine that I was working for. So were they going to put us in downtown New York or Brooklyn? And they eventually settled on Queens, which in some ways was kind of cool because it was a little closer to my home. I could jump right on the railroad and be home even quicker than I was when I was working in Manhattan. But it also pulled me away from New York, which is where the theater is and where I did most of my stuff after work. So it was six of one, half a dozen of another. But we had been working in this new location away from Manhattan for a few months. And then that morning, typical gorgeous morning, I believe it was a Tuesday, in New York, September, like crisp air, but a little bit warm still. And got off the Long Island Railroad train and was going to do my usual routine. Was heading for the office, and in between, would stop at a little kind of bodega newspaper place. You could get chips. You know, these places are all over, you know, Snapple if you want to. And I would get my usual morning thing when I wasn't in my healthy mode. If I was in a healthy mode, I'd just, you know, have a banana, and I'd end up losing a pound that week. But if I was in my normal unhealthy mode, in the old days I would get coffee and a bagel, but this was Queens, wasn't so easy to find in this area. So I would stop in for like a little piece of sort of corn cake or coffee cake that they made, and a coffee, and I think they charged me $1 or $1.25. And I would do this, you know, most days of the week. And was heading down there, not thinking of anything, about anything. I get to this bodega where pretty much nobody spoke English. I mean, they knew enough to do the transactions that you had to do of business, where you would buy your cake or you'd buy your newspaper or whatever, and they do it that way, but really had no real command of the English language. And my command of Spanish went back to just basic high school Spanish, which I learned was pretty much useless the one time I visited Argentina and thought I was a big hotshot and could talk to everybody and realized I knew about 10 words and was mispronouncing half of them. So that was a little embarrassing. So I get to my bodega place on this morning, and I'm grabbing my little cake that I'm going to have for breakfast and waiting for my coffee, and everybody's looking at the TV. And the TV is turned on to this picture that's coming out of Lower Manhattan of the World Trade Center with smoke and a plane in it. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, there you go. Look at that, you know, a plane accident. And I couldn't really make any kind of comment. You know, they're just sort of looking at it open-mouthed. And for me, it's like, well, you know, bad stuff happens. You have, you know, accidents with aircraft all over the place. And really, you know, I thought, no, this is you know, going to be somewhat big news. Not thinking anything more of it than it was, oh, you know, some little plane crashed into a building in New York. That's going to be a pain. Kind of glad I'm not working in New York today. I head out of the bodega, walk down the street, not really noticing or seeing anything unusual in the people. And then, of course, about 5 to 10 minutes later, I get to the office, and people are already talking a little bit about it. And I don't think they even had the TV on at that point. Yeah, we had a TV in the conference room. Nobody bothered with that. It was just this weird thing. And whatever the time it was, a few minutes later, it was maybe 10 after 9, 5 after 9, someone had the radio on and said, another plane hit. And that, it wasn't, the moment wasn't when that first plane hit, but when the second went in, that was when it all changed. I think for everybody, but especially for people who lived in New York. I mean, I lived on Long Island and was working in Queens and was obviously doing a lot of stuff in New York City. That was, even 8 years later, you still feel that little chill. You still feel that moment when everything changed. I mean, who knew that we would get so many years of misery from George Bush and that so many of the ramifications of 9/11 would be so negative, not from the point of fighting terrorism, not from the point of worrying about other strikes and Arabs and things like that, thank God, but just from the point of going into Iraq instead of Iran or some other places, or Afghanistan. We did go into Afghanistan, but not quite. It couldn't bomb every single mountain, hut, and cave and get them all. So even now, 8 years later, we're seeing resurgence over there. Maybe because we used our resources in the wrong places. Not to mention the inflation that went on. Not to mention the loss of civil rights in this country to some extent because of Bush policies. So it all started at that one little moment. And for me, it was just someone saying, oh my God, somebody put on the TV in the conference room, another plane hit. And from then on, it was just, what the hell's going on? You know, I remember one of the interns crying because she'd just been walking the street, came in, you know, a few minutes late and heard it, and we were all wondering how we would get home that day. Turns out the Long Island Railroad, which I say terrible things about a lot of the time, operated that day. And from at least the early part of the day, I don't know if they shut down all transportation later in the afternoon, but they got us in a very crowded and surprisingly reasonably organized way towards Jamaica and points east, and they got people the hell away, which was a real good thing, because by the time I got out of the office, I guess it was 11 or so, or 11:30, and we were seeing smoke from far away. You could see it from Woodside, Queens, and, you know, couldn't see the building per se crumbling, but you could see the residue and the remnants of all that stuff going into the air. And so I spent the rest of that afternoon on the couch with my wife, and the one ironically lovely part of the thing was the week before was Labor Day, and we went with my aunt on Labor Day to just window shop for a dog. We weren't necessarily going to buy, but we made up our minds that we like dachshunds. They're really cute, and they're not so allergenic, and they're small dogs, and they don't need the grooming that some other dogs do. I mean, you know, we have this list of reasons why a dachshund would be the ideal dog for our situation. So we say, you know what, we're going to go to the pet store, and if they happen to have a dachshund for sale, we'll get one. Figuring, you know, what are the odds, and maybe they will, and then will it like us, and will it bite? So we go to the pet store, and what do you know? They have two dachshunds, both adorable, one a male, the other a female, one dark-eyed, the other light-eyed, and one was kind of, you know, just poking around, and really, they were both really, really cute, of course, but, you know, taking it easy, and he was nicknamed Laptop, which was, they gave him that name because his main goal in life was to crawl into your lap and snuggle and sleep. The other one was kind of moseying around, getting her nose stuck in the bars of the cage, and just being a little bit, as my wife would put it, foo-foo-doo-doo. That's her way of saying she was kind of a, you know, an obstreperous little pup. And we didn't really want an obstreperous little pup at that point in our lives. We kind of, you know, we were both working, my wife and I, and we're very, very busy people, and we wanted a dog to complete our unit of family at that point, but we didn't want something that was going to be driving us nuts. So we got the mellower one, the Laptop, and fell in love with him immediately and renamed him Murray, who was our beloved first dachshund, and remains with us and is a Laptop to this day. Nothing more that he wants to do, well, besides perhaps eat, than sit on your lap and sleep and cuddle. But it was kind of, it was one of the things that got us through 9/11, was that we had just had Murray, our new dog, for a week. And we were still training him and still getting used to him and still getting used to us and him still basically sleeping on our laps a lot of the times or with us at night. And so sitting there on the couch watching television and hearing all the news stories, the true ones, and also the rumors and the lies and the gossip, and also the horror stories, and seeing the plane, you know, because of video, the planes going in again and again from the different angles, and the thing and the flame shooting through those floors of the World Trade Center. And it did make a difference to be sitting there watching that with an adorable 4-month-old, 5-month-old, maybe, puppy on your lap, and with, you know, your wife by your side. It, I guess you can understand how that makes a difference, but it was a very, very, you know, it made the day somewhat more bearable, and certainly the days after more bearable, to be there with that kind of circle around you. So I hope that on that date you had that kind of circle of friends and family to go to talk to be with, or just to know that they're there. And that 8 years later on this day, that you have that for you as well. And I'm always grateful for that, and even if I don't always show it or say it, and I'm of course grateful, as I do this bit of a segue here, for our listeners and for the people who have stayed with this program, because that was part of it too. I wasn't doing the radio show at that point, but I was writing for a major website, and I was reviewing, so I had that outlet as well to say my feelings about things and to talk to people and get my stuff out there, as it were, which is a real important thing for me. And so on this September 11th, 2009, 8 years later, absolutely amazing, I want to thank you for your listenership, and also tell you what's going to be on this episode of Dave's Gone By. Yeah, I knew it was going to be a catchy bit of a segue there, but what the heck. On this episode, we're going to be doing Inside Broadway. That is, even though I'm living in Colorado now, even though I'm 2,000 miles away from the Great White Way, doesn't mean that I've forgotten about New York theater or that I don't care about Broadway. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to come to New York in October and see some shows. So, yeah, we're still going to tell you exactly what the big rumors and stories are as far as Broadway and off-Broadway theater. And tonight, long promised this, I'm finally going to get to do it. I'm going to review the big Broadway dance hit called Burn the Floor. Opened a couple of weeks ago, and people didn't know if it would take off or if enough people would come out to see an all-dance program kind of modeled after those reality TV dance shows that they have, except these are all really professional, amazing dancers. Well, it turns out the show not only got audiences, but it's so popular that it was only supposed to run, I think, until October, and they've extended it until January. So I'm going to let you know what I thought of Burn the Floor when I saw that on Broadway a couple of weeks ago. Also, as I mentioned last week, I talked all about the big move from New York to Colorado, but that was all my perspective. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have my wife, Joyce, tell her thoughts on the move from New York out west? You know, because it was for her job, pretty much, that we went. So I wanted to see her basic thoughts and feelings now that we've been living here just over a month. And I think that'll be really, really cool. And if there's time, since this is kind of a New York-centric program, even though, you know, the whole Colorado thing, if there's time, I'm going to talk about something almost as tragic as 9/11, the New York Mets. The Mets, whom I gave up on, as I've mentioned so many times on this program, 2 years ago, when they collapsed, and I just want to give them a nice little dig in the ribs, a little post-mortem for one more lost season for this lost and occasionally despicable team. So, yeah, do stick around for that. And I want to also thank our sponsors of Dave's Gone By. They've been with us for so long and are staying with us. God bless them, even as we're now on the internet at davesgoneby.org. Thank you to Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway, for all your copy jobs, big and small. They can do it. They can do printing and binding. They can put your logo on a mug or a pen. They can do giant jobs, tiny jobs, and you know what? For any job that they do for you, if you mention Dave's Gone By, you get 10% off. So, let's say you get one copy and it's 10 cents or whatever it is, they'll give you back a penny. If you do a $1,000 copy job, you get $100 back. All you gotta do is mention Dave's Gone By at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Give him a call at 516-569-5577. That's 516-569-5577. Hewlett Minuteman Press. They're the kings. And this program is brought to you by Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party decorating needs. Now, I tell you this every single time, even though the name of the company is Fancy Schmancy Balloons, it isn't just like some guy blowing up balloons or making balloon animals. It's the whole look and decor of your bar mitzvah, of your christening, of your graduation party, of your sukkahs and your Jewish New Year parties, whatever you're having. Call Jeff at Fancy Schmancy, 516-797-3229. 516-797-3229. Very, very great, reasonable rates. And, you know, if you don't know what to do about your party as far as if you want a DJ or catering, Jeff can hook you up with those people, too. So you really make him the first stop for your party planning. And this program is brought to you by Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. That's right. Since over 65 years ago, people were turning to Performing Arts Insider to find out what happens on the stages of New York, what shows are opening, what's coming down the pike in a few months to Broadway, what actors and actresses are going to be on the stages of New York, and how do you contact their management in case maybe you want them to be in your play or your video? How do you contact the designers? How do you contact the producers? Maybe you've written a play or you have a project that you want someone to put some money in. How do you find these people? You find them in Performing Arts Insider. It's a journal that comes out 21 times a year, or you can get it just the once a month monthly edition. Find out more at performingartsinsider.com. And remember, if you're a Dave's Gone By listener, you get a very big discount on Performing Arts Insider magazine. Go to davesgoneby.org to find out just how much. Well, we've got still a bunch much more to do on this September 11th program that I am calling Just Another Day. Not to make light of, certainly not to make light of what happened 8 years ago, but just to say time does pass, you know, and also, since I'm out of New York, I always thought they should have made this a national holiday as a day of remembrance, just the way they make Memorial Day, perhaps, or some of the President's Days where you're supposed to remember and think about things. I think it would be a day where people would actually do that. But, you know, people gotta work, and life goes on, and shows go on. So, yeah, September 11th will never be just another day. But we're gonna treat it like that. We're gonna forget for the moment of what the miserable terrorists did and the people who supported them. And we're also going to forget for the moment that the fact that 8 years later, World Trade Center is still a hole in the ground in New York, which is unconscionable. Don't know why they can't get at least that going. Nope, we're just going to do what we do because that's what we do as Americans. Boy, that was pseudo profundity at its best, ladies and gentlemen. We go on, and we have fun, and we talk, and we work, and we do our thing, and we get by as best we can. And we're going to do the best show we can here on Dave's Gone By, and it all continues right after these messages. Everything is iPod this and download that. Whatever happened to good old-fashioned CDs? Well, at Dave's Gone By, we're still making them. Nearly every episode we've ever done is preserved digitally on compact disc and for sale at davesgoneby.org. And at a new low price, $10 per show, shipping and handling included. Add $1 per disc for a personalized autograph and check davesgoneby.org for multiple discounts. P2P, MP3, CD Me. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TotalTheater.com. Yes, we do go inside Broadway virtually every week here on Dave's Gone By, because I love the theater, and that's part of this show. It's a mix of crazy humor, observational humor, music, and interviews and sketches, but it's also about just really appreciating the theater, because, you know, TV and movies get so much coverage endlessly, everything from Entertainment Tonight to TMZ to every other commercial on television is the movies and what the big TV shows are. Let's at least have a little appreciation of the great stuff that's being done on the stages of New York. Well, one thing that won't be done on the stages of New York anytime soon, no surprise here, the snake bit Busker Alley is hitting another roadblock. You remember this one? Theatergoers might remember what was going to happen with this show. Now, there are certain productions, certain shows that bring a rueful smile to a knowing theatergoer. There's Moose Murders, known as the ultimate flop. Carrie, for being kind of a cult flop. They did a musical of the Stephen King show, Carrie, that people, some loved, a lot of people thought was like, well, nice try, but no. But it's kind of gone down as a big cult show, either way. And then there was Breakfast at Tiffany's, where they made a musical of the Truman Capote book and the movie, and it closed out of town, and we kind of remember it because Mary Tyler Moore was in it, and had all these high hopes for it. Never happened. Anyway, there's now Busker Alley. This show was supposed to open on Broadway in 1995. That's nearly 15 years ago. And was supposed to star Tommy Toon. And people didn't know what to make of it because it sounded a little bit nostalgic and twee and cutesy back then. And everybody was saying, well, maybe Tommy Toon can pull it off, because he was, at that point, the golden guy. I mean, with everything from choreographing Grand Hotel to appearing in My One and Only, you know, as a choreographer and a performer and a personality, he had what it took to make a cute little Broadway musical happen. But something happened, and he hurt his foot very badly. Whether it was badly enough to truly cancel the show, or he hurt his foot because the show needed to be canceled, we'll never know. But, well, he, I guess, knows. Maybe we'll hear the truth one day. But anyway, producers never quite gave up on Busker Alley. One main reason is it was written by the same folks who did Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Mary Poppins, the Sherman Brothers. So they got themselves a string of new producers and a new star, Jim Dale, wonderful actor. People basically know him from Barnum. And they wanted to bring Busker Alley to Broadway this season. Well, no. They're saying that they lost one writer, and then another one has health problems now. So they've returned all the investment money back to the people who put it in, and they're dumping the project. So if anybody has any interest in producing Busker Alley for Broadway, and you have $8 to $12 million sitting around, I guess contact Jim Dale or somebody. But we ain't going to see it this season. Speaking of season, Classic Stage Company, off-Broadway, has announced their new season. They're going to do an adaptation of The Trojan War by Brian Kulik, and this has nothing to do with them going up against Ramsay's for the condom market share. No, this is going to mix Shakespeare and a book by Thomas Hayward to tell the story of the Trojan War. Also, there'll be a new play by David Ives. Of course, everybody remembers him for those great one acts and All in the Timing. And he also had a very, very well-received play a year or so ago called New Jerusalem. So his new play is called Venus in Fur. That's singular, not like the Velvet Underground song. Venus in Fur, about a very, very weird audition. And also, Classic Stage Company is going to close its season with a Russian comedy called The Forest by Alexander Ostrovsky, with Diana Wiest appearing in that. You'll know her from one of the Law and Orders. She always plays a judge there, and she was also in Hannah and Her Sisters. So it sounds like CSC might be worth checking out off-Broadway this season. Now, speaking of some Broadway stuff, remember the big story of West Side Story when that opened a few months ago? It's a big hit, you know, even though the reviews were kind of mixed, and they're saying that Lawrence, the writer and director, didn't do quite as good a job on this as he did on Gypsy. But, you know, still, people want to see West Side Story. It's a great show, and he does a really good job with it. The only quote-unquote controversy, or the thing that he wanted to make new about it, was he wanted some of the dialogue and some of the songs to be in Spanish, because he figured it would give a more authentic feel to the production. Because, you know, it is let's face it, when the Spanish people are together, are they really going to talk English? No, they're doing it for our benefit. So Lawrence figured, with America going so Latino population-wise, and also with the fact that this is 2009, and you need a new spin on things when you're doing revivals, so people don't just say, oh, you know, it's the same old West Side Story, he decided to throw in a bit more Spanish dialogue. He got Manuel Miranda, the guy who wrote In the Heights, to do a translation of some of the Stephen Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein songs into Spanish. Basically two songs that they changed. One is I Feel Pretty, and the other is A Boy Like That.
Ese cabrón mató tu hermano. Olvida ese americano. Piensan los tuyos, son no los tuyos.
Now those of us who know West Side Story, and that's a lot of people, we can get the gist of what's going on when the songs are sung in Spanish. I mean, when Maria sings Soy Hermosa, I Feel Pretty, I mean, we know she's saying wonderful things about how she feels because she's in love, and she's a young girl, and she feels pretty and wonderful. Okay, we get it. And we also even get when they're singing A Boy Like That Would Kill Your Brother. I mean, you know the scene. I mean, Tony's just accidentally killed the guy and blah, blah, blah. I have to say, I don't mind the I Feel Pretty being in Spanish so much as A Boy Like That. I mean, that's really, you want to hear those lyrics because that's an important song, verbally as well as emotionally. But Arthur Lawrence, you know, he's a stubborn old coot. I think he's 91 or 92 years old. God bless him. He directed this revival of West Side Story. He wrote the book for the original West Side Story, so he's entitled to do what he wants to it. And he wanted to make it feel more, quote-unquote, authentic by adding the Spanish. But, you know, give a man credit when he realizes kind of an error. And if people wanted to go see a West Side Story in Spanish, let a Spanish company do it in Spanish and give their take on it, and then we'll see that. But when you start doing this little mishmash, you are perhaps depriving people who really never saw West Side Story or don't know it of the full experience because they're missing out on some great lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, or they might not get all the nuances of what's going on in those songs in relation to the plot at that moment. And Lawrence, just a week or so ago, said, you know what, we tried it. I wanted to see if it would be more effective in Spanish, more authentic feeling, but instead, some of the songs don't quite pack the punch that they used to, and the audiences that I've noticed are not, you know, they're complaining a little bit. They kind of would have liked to have had it in English, and so he changed it back. And I think as of now, or a week or so from now, West Side Story will be back all in English. When you got something so great as West Side Story, it is one of the great all-time musicals up there in the top 20, if not the top 10, probably the top 10. You know, just do it right. Just tell the story. The book is all there in front of you. There's so many other musicals with so many problems in their books and in their songs that you should tinker with and change. You don't really need to tinker with West Side Story. Speaking of Stephen Sondheim musicals, A Little Night Music lives. This is the show that, another show that has been promised for Broadway for a few years now. This is an old show, of course, that they're hoping to revive. For a while, it was going to be Glenn Close. For a couple of years, she had her eye on doing A Little Night Music, but that just never happened. And then, for a while, it sounded like, dig this for casting, they were going to have Vanessa Redgrave and Natasha Richardson, mother and daughter, both in A Little Night Music, which would have been real interesting except for the fact, as we all know, that Natasha Richardson had an unfortunate run-in with a ski pole and a tree. And so we figured, well, that'd be the end of that. But A Little Night Music is just too important a Sondheim musical to keep down for very long, so they're recasting it, and dig the cast on this. Angela Lansbury, playing Madame Armfelt, the older lady, the doyenne of the household, and Catherine Zeta-Jones, playing Desiree, the desired woman who's part of this love triangle of these two guys. Well, in case you don't, for some reason, know this, a little light music is where Sendin' the Clowns come from. So we'll be hearing Sendin' the Clowns, hopefully, on Broadway in a little light music this spring with Angela Lansbury and Catherine Zeta-Jones. Certainly one of the more hoped for and expected musicals coming up this season. And another show with music this season on Broadway, rumor has it that Michael Feinstein, you know, the singer, pianist, came out of the cabaret world and just took things by storm for a while. He was playing a spring Broadway show with Dame Edna. Kind of an interesting pairing there, a bit of comedy, you know, and then living by the music. But I don't know if that's going to happen. Feinstein is coming to Broadway, though, in his own basic concert show. He hasn't done one of these in over a decade. It's a standard review called All About Me, and it's coming to Broadway in February. He'll be doing standards and, you know, other kinds of songs, lesser-known songs by great composers with a small orchestra. So we'll hear all about Michael Feinstein in just a couple of months, and in just a minute, we'll hear all about the Broadway dance musical Burn the Floor, which I saw a couple of weeks ago. Gonna tell you what I thought of it right after this. Performing Arts Insider, Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway for more than six decades, telling you everything you need to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance. It's all there in the pages of Performing Arts Insider. And you, as Dave's Gone By listeners, can get 10% off annual subscriptions. Just go to PerformingArtsInsider.com to find out more about the business.
And don't bother me with Moyer.
I am not a particular dance fan, okay? I mean, I like dance. It can be very exciting, and especially in a Broadway musical, or it can be fun to try to dance, even if you have two left feet or three left feet like me. But give me more than 5 to 10 minutes of dance, and my mind starts to wander, and my foot starts to tap, and I start to think about, oh, all the other things I could be doing with my time rather than watching people caper about the stage in costumes and make extended arm and leg motions. I thought maybe it would be a little different seeing a show called Burn the Floor, which opened on Broadway just a few weeks ago. And it's kind of like those Forever Tango shows that they used to do. They bring them in every 4 or 5 years, where there's no plot, there's no book. All it is dance segments. Beautiful people dressed absolutely spectacularly to the nines, and having amazing dance talent, strutting their stuff, showing their skills. What could be wrong? Well, if you love that kind of thing, nothing. And that's why Forever Tango comes back every couple of years. And that's why we have these TV shows that have turned them into competitions, So You Think You Can Dance, and Dancing with the Stars. And those are actually quite fun. Of course, granted, they add the competition element, which makes them more exciting. And it's all very, you know, you see about a minute and a half of actual dance, and then there's talking, and then there's commercials, so within a half hour, or an hour-long show, you're maybe actually getting 17 minutes of total dance time. Well, okay, that's fine with me. That's more entertaining for me, personally, than watching dance after dance after dance, which is why I have a problem with that kind of thing. And I had a problem, again, seeing Burn the Floor. The first 15 minutes of this show, which is playing at the Longacre Theater, by the way, it's great. You've got incredibly sexy people. You watch their moves, their bodies, the way they go. And since this isn't all tango, it's a little more interesting. You get a bit more varied kinds of dance and all these different types of shapes and people on stage. So you see a couple of these, and you're like, okay, this is cool. This is good. And then it goes on. And then it goes on. And then it goes on, it goes on. So even though it's just under 2 hours, so they don't really extend it that much, it's the kind of show I could have seen 45 minutes of and been happy with, could have seen 90 minutes of and been relatively happy with, 2 hours, checking the watch, tapping the foot. And the thing I did not understand is that the audience cheered the loudest for these two people, Maxim Chmerkovsky and Karina Smirnoff. Even before they started dancing, the audience was cheering for them, apparently because they were on TV's Dancing with the Stars. I have to say, I found them the least interesting of all the dancers, and the least muscular or physically perfect, like some of the other dancers were, and at least graceful. Not that they were in any way, shape, or form bad, and the audience cheered and loved them and whatever. I don't know, I thought a bunch of the others were much more interesting than they were. And I don't think they're even in the show anymore. They left, they were kind of these guest stars, and they have some other people. So, let me be also clear about this. A couple of months ago, I was in Los Angeles for a fellowship with the National Endowment for the Arts and University of Southern California. And it was for arts journalists to really plunge us in and take us away from our daily routine of just blogging and writing columns and put us back into the art scene and see what it takes to make theater and dance and art and to discuss what we do and how we do it. Well, part of that was taking a dance class, an introductory basic level dance class in which I utterly disgraced myself. I realized that I cannot, for the life of me, chassez, which I guess is like sashaying, only you do it left to right. I don't know what the hell it is. Anyway, I could not do it. And nobody made fun of me. It was a very, kind and open room and stuff. And then I love the teacher took me aside in front of everybody. She said, "This is your specialness. That's your way of doing it. You're special." And I was like, special, like wearing a helmet kind of special, I guess. But it's to say that, okay, I did it, I tried it, I failed utterly, and understood how very, very complicated and difficult it is to dance. I mean, to do 5 seconds, to do 8 bars, a count, up to 8 of dance, which I've never been able to do properly. I'm just not coordinated that way. I'm not ungraceful as a person or on a stage, but if you ask me to put moves together and move my legs and my arms in a dance way, I cannot do it. So, and I tried. It's not like I didn't try. I got up there and gave it my best. So I appreciate more than ever just how much goes into every second of a dancer moving on stage. That said, I still don't want to watch 2 hours of it. I'm sorry. Anyway, if you do, Burn the Floor is playing at the Longacre Theater. As I said earlier in the show, it's a hit. People came. It was only supposed to run a couple of weeks. Instead, they've now extended it to January 3rd, right after New Year's. So if you're into that kind of thing, it delivers, okay? If you're not into that kind of thing, deliver yourself to another show. That's as best as I can say. Inside Broadway. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Hey, Dave's Gone By listeners. If you like hearing me, you'll love reading me even more. So hurry and get my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with hilarious plays that were performed in New York, like King Solomon the Wise and Blind Date. 232 pages of pure Dave, only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or visit the Dave's Gone By website. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this September day. And, if you were listening to our show last week, and I assume you would have, because that would have been the intelligent thing to do if you had an hour free and absolutely nothing else in your life to do. But you heard me talk about the move from New York to Greeley that my wife and I made just a month ago. And so I got into all the things about selling our house or trying to, and then packing up a pod and moving out here and, trying to make a life out here and also discovering that life in Colorado is different from life in New York and the same in a lot of ways, too. But, you got my perspective on it for an hour as I rambled on and on about everything from a corn festival to stray dogs in the kitchen to... What? I hope I mentioned the bunny in the backyard. That's kind of funny. Now, this person you hear kind of helping me out here, as she does in every aspect of my life and has for 11 or so years...
13.
Well, yes, since we were dating... You've counted every day and the seconds, haven't you?
Yes,
sir. This is my wife, ladies and gentlemen. She's been on the show before. Her name is Joyce. She is the love of my life. And why are you giving me that look?
Yeah, right.
Well, that and vanilla ice cream and bunnies and what else? What are the other loves of my life?
Volleyball teams.
Volleyball teams? Oh, you mean nubile co-ed volleyball teams? Yes. That would kind of, that would sort of do it. We can make a list of that later. But I gave so much of my opinion and my thoughts about the big move from New York to Colorado last week. I thought, let's get the other side of it. Let's have Joyce, my wife, tell her side of things and her experiences and her thoughts on the big change. So what has been the biggest change for you? Joyce keeps wiping her face because we're sitting very close together, and I'm a rather expectorant speaker. So there's spittle, not that you need to know this, but there's bits of saliva flying everywhere, not just on the mic, but it's kind of this omnidirectional spit.
You're like a pug.
What do you mean I'm like a pug? What do you mean I'm like a pug as I spit on the letter P?
So what's your question?
My question is, what was the most surprising thing or the thing that you most have to get used to in the change from living all your life in the state of New York up until a month ago and now being in northern Colorado?
Well, I think to me the best thing in terms of just the physical environment was the sun. When I first came out for the interview, that's what really struck me. And I think that the sun does make people happier. And I find people out here are really happy and really nice.
Whose sun?
No, not the sun of somebody. The sun in the sky.
Cause
the mountains.
Because you find a lot of people here who believe in the sun, S-O-N. They used to be Jewish, now they're not. And so that's taken a little getting used to.
No, but I mean it. I mean the climate. I mean, let's just put it this way. When I first came out, my colleague took me to Margie's, which is a lovely little coffee shop. And let's just say I heart coffee, as most people who are in academia, when you're doing the long grading or, you know, getting up for the early morning class, I think to me that kind of set the tone that it's a really sweet college town. I mean, we've eaten in every restaurant and every little coffee shop. We've been downtown. We've been to the Corn Festival.
Your thoughts on the all-important Corn Festival.
No, not even the Corn Festival. I think what really surprised me the most is how really walkable and bikeable and how easy it is to get around, even with the little bus system that I thought we'd be living out in a place where it'd be very difficult to get around, and it would take, you know, hours to walk somewhere, and we wouldn't be able to go to food places without a car, and it would be very, you know, more rural. But Greeley is a nice mix of some agriculture, right, the community-sponsored stuff, woohoo, and then, but also it's kind of citified, right, that the college is a really central part of it. So I really dug that, and that surprised me. I thought we'd be more rural, but we're not.
Yeah, I mean, that surprised me, too, because when we first said northern Colorado, not Denver, not a big city, as it were.
Or not Fort Collins, yeah.
I mean, we knew we were going to a college town, but still, you figure 2 blocks from the college, it's cows moseying along the walkway on dirt roads.
But we've learned it's not cows. It's sometimes underage and hopefully of age college students tossing paper cups and beer and things like that on their lawns.
Well, I don't know if I mentioned this last show. I'll mention it again. You weren't shocked by this, but I passed 2 houses around here.
Yeah.
Not sororities or fraternities, but they're student houses. Mm-hmm. They're for the kids who are going to UNC.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them sitting on the porch, which is a really nice thing. You know, on the porch on the couch. And, I've seen them drink beer. Mm-hmm. I've seen them drink something from red plastic cups as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they also sit there with these giant glass bongs.
It's like a hookah. We don't necessarily know what's in it. I mean, obviously, if there are drugs in it, you would smell it.
Well, maybe not from the street. But no, you're right. Maybe it's dried fruit, which they say, or leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I mean, there is a place very close to campus.
Mm-hmm.
What is the marijuana culture around here? It just seems to be very different from New York on the tolerance and
I would say that your observations are flawed because you didn't spend...
Thank you, dear.
No, you've not spent any time in New York around colleges. Think about NYU, Washington Square Park.
Every time
you walk out, someone's asking you for something. I think that you're so distant from college culture, and we don't understand the culture out here, so I don't think you can make any observations of what the kids are doing based on one or two instances.
I didn't dorm, But I knew that, I think you couldn't have alcohol in the dorm unless you snuck it in.
And
but
the kids that we're seeing are not in dorms, honey. Those are private
homes. Private housing, I understand. I just, I think it's rather brazen to sit outside on your porch and toke from a hookah, except if it's legal, it's legal.
Well, we had friends, too, who lived back in New York, who lived next to one of the first hookah bar places.
Yeah.
And they said it was just herbal and all that kind of stuff, so I don't know. I wouldn't be so quick to judge.
Okay. If there's one thing I am in my entire life, it's judgmental. I think you basically learned that. So besides the coffee, the availability of coffee on a regular basis, what's your favorite thing?
Well, I know most of the people in the coffee house by first name. I also like, because I study aging, the high volume of older people here and older services.
Okay,
and I think that's really neat. And compared to back home, the older people I've seen out here, although not all of them, are quite healthy. So it's interesting to me to see how people live, both a little more urban near college and more rurally out in the farms. I mean, that's a big opportunity for me.
Well, when you say the older people are healthy, in other words, you would go to, not a nursing home, but you would go
centers or independent living. And the activities and the things that people are doing here are things that back home people wouldn't do.
Such as just murder.
Playing Wii. I mean this kind of
athletic. I beg your pardon. They play with their Wii.
Athletic.
Alzheimer's old men do that.
No, not that. Wii is a game people play, or they're just the I guess the physicalness. People are healthier so far. I mean, I've not seen everything, but that's been really neat. So I don't know. I think I've been pleasantly surprised in every aspect.
Okay. What do you miss most about New York, if anything?
Well, of course,
your parents,
of course. I miss the family, of course. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think if we couldn't walk places here, I would miss the walking. But you'll laugh, but I miss I miss commuting, because majority of my reading of papers, majority of my grading and my article reading and writing was done on a train.
See,
a 2-hour train ride. Yeah.
We live about 8 minutes walk from the school where you teach.
Yeah.
Which, granted, in nice weather is no big deal. In a snowstorm, that's a very good thing.
Yeah.
So, great. We purposely wanted to at least rent a place to live before we look for places to buy again.
Mm-hmm.
Close to school, because we know the area and you won't get lost, and we don't drive, we don't have a car yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and we figure, okay, that's... And then you're saying, like, you miss the Long Island Railroad.
Well, I miss also, when I used to live in Philly, it was the 2 hours on the bus, so I could get a lot of work done. You could decompress from the day, do your reading, do editing, write stuff. You could really, organize things, and it was a really good transition. So I do miss the transitional time.
That's hysterical. Like, it's just amazing.
I heart traffic as well. And I heart riding.
Well, people don't get this. My mother taught this to me, that everybody supposedly hates red lights and heavy traffic and slow-moving stuff and yellow lights. And it isn't, if you're a nervous driver or a new driver, the ability to stop for 2 minutes and collect yourself, or the ability to go, instead of having to go 45 miles an hour to keep up with the speed of traffic, if traffic's going 25 or 20, and you don't feel like going much faster than that, that's an okay thing.
Of course.
But you're also a speed demon. When you get a little more comfortable driving, you're going to,
like to go fast.
Yeah.
I don't mind the big trucks. I don't mind drivers, close to me. I have no problem with it. I enjoy driving.
Okay. Well, but you got to watch the foot on that gas.
I don't have, what is it, not lead foot, what do you call it? I don't have that. I'm a very cautious driver.
No, I've been in the car with you, with an instructor anyway.
Listen, that's right. Then I put on the radio, and I'm very, very safe. I was taught by a very, very calm, almost militaristic, but regimented woman back home, so I like driving, and I think it's wonderful. I mean, for us to get to Estes Park or, drive around a little bit, do some activities in the winter, it would be great.
What are you looking forward to over the next year?
Wow. What am I looking forward to in the next year?
Yeah. Putting my wife on the spot, ladies and gentlemen, on Dave's Gone
By. I don't
know.
I guess just being at school, right? Hopefully maintaining a good, good quality of teaching, good quality of scholarship. Meeting more people. I really want to meet more people, and I want to explore more. I mean, the thing I feel, it's like you know, we've been here over a month, but I'd love to go see other parts of Colorado. Yep. And everybody, all my friends back home, I have one friend who's like, you need to go to Estes Park. And someone will say, no, you need to go to this place or that place. So I just want to really experience things more. And there's one guy on the faculty who's like, you can't be in Colorado if you live so far from the mountains. So I want to get out to the mountains
yeah.
more. I want to, you know, I want to experience more of nature. And I'm really hoping that the winters are not bad and that we have the 6 inches of snow, but they melt so that we don't have to, I don't know, go snowshoeing. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So that's my big concern, is that we love this weather. Let us get through another season and see what the winter's like, and just explore nature.
Now, you've never skied, right?
No, but as I said, my people are Austrian, so maybe there's some, you know, somatic or genetic memory for being in the Alps on skis, and I'm hoping when I get on skis I don't fall and break my ankle.
Oh, well, yeah, yes. You know.
Yes, but I'm looking forward to that. I want to experience more. I'd like to swim, really learn to swim and go swimming. I'd like to really experience more of outdoors and really become more of a hiker. And it's been hard for me because, you know, we don't have the altitude endurance yet. Build up my endurance in the altitude and really do well. I think that would be great.
I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the altitude in the air has affected you, or the allergies certainly have.
But even the fact that I'm not back to being on the treadmill as much, I get tired more easily in terms of that stuff, that I think it takes time to build lung capacity. The only thing is one of my grad students said, is when you go back to places with lower altitude, you'll have so much energy. But
we'll sleep 3 hours a night, we'll feel just fine, yeah.
But I would love to just adjust more and get back to more, you know, vigorous, rigorous, fun, outdoor, you know, or at least, I don't know, more exercise-y kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, the aerobic sex that we
No, just being able to be on the treadmill without, you know, feeling like I need a Red Bull or something would be an advancement. I don't need to have oxygen when I'm on a treadmill. That would be an accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, Joyce, any thoughts for our people back home in the, well, no, it's not our home is here. So any thoughts for people back at the old home in New York before we say farewell to the segment? And,
well, you know, that we miss them all, and some of us will come to see us, come out to see us, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
And I should thank David. As I said, he's my plus one or my trailing spouse, but he's really been so much fun, and it's been wonderful to go through this experience. I think it would be difficult to go through it without having, you know, what I study is social support, but it would be very difficult without such. I mean, we met wonderful friends here, and the networks of people have just been phenomenal. They're fantastic people. But to have, you know, have someone that's your partner, I think it's really, really nice to have. And even the, you know, the puppies are a good stress reliever, so I feel that if I had to do this, I couldn't have done it alone. You know, and I'm very happy, although they're all boys, to have all the boys with me.
Or two dogs, she's two talking about. Yeah.
And to be really, really helpful. So, I mean, I'm very thankful. I have nothing, there's nothing that I could ask for. Perhaps if we sold the house, that would be great. But,
yeah.
You know, but beside that, I mean, I think the transition has really been a wonderful adventure. I hope for yourself, and I really have felt personal growth from it. I think it's been a really learning experience for me.
I think for me too. I mean, I'm enjoying it, which I didn't. I kind of thought I would because I like new things, but I'm liking it here. Granted, it was the most gorgeous weather you could have had for a month living
but
anywhere.
But did you tell them also that you've biked? I mean, you've ridden everywhere. That you've taken your bike everywhere.
Yes, and I have one piece of goat grass stuck in my tire. I tried
get
pulling
the goo
it.
Tube.
My God. I'm serious. I tried. I went to go.
Don't
and then
it.
I heard,
don't do it.
And I just pushed it right
they
back
also,
in.
They also sell that goo in a squirtable form. You can squirt that on your tire. No, it's the goo that you put on the tire.
You can
do that.
I'm going to have to because that's the one thing here about. The biking is wonderful because it's not always flat, but
you can bike everywhere. And the curbs are cut so you can bike them. You don't fall off the curb.
And, you know, there aren't nearly as many cars as long. It's a great biking town, except for the plague of goat grass, which I mentioned last week. It's this plant that you know, pretty little plant with these little grass-like leaves.
Thorns.
Well, then it shoots out thorns when it's time to propagate.
You know who I think planted them?
Who?
All the bicycle repair shops in town. I think they go around and water them and put little plant food.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I'm sure.
It has to be.
Even one of my colleagues said that you have to be careful with your pets because his little... I forget what his dog is. I think he's a mutt. But she came in and was, you know, kind of yelping, and he looked, and in the pad of the paw were these
thorns. They get stuck in there.
Yeah.
So if they can do something about the plague of goat grass, this would be a really ideal place to live.
Well, you did well. I mean, you did. Oh, yeah. You really adjusted well.
I'm trying. I'm doing my best. And the fact that I can still do this radio show the way I do it, get it on the internet, have people hear it, and I don't have to be in New York to do that. It took me a surprisingly long time, even this late in the new millennium, to really understand that.
Mm-hmm.
To say, you put yourself in a room with a couple of microphones and it's done.
That's go viral. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be in Czechoslovakia, it could be in Antarctica, it could be in a little house in northern Colorado.
Oh, that's the goal of the internet, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that and porn.
And Facebook and MySpace.
Yeah, that too. Anyway, honey, I love you very, very much. I thought I'd put that out there for everybody to hear me say it.
And it's not our anniversary. Oh, my goodness. Let me mark it down on the calendar. Hold on.
Yeah, there we go.
Got to mark this one down.
And, of course, I want to thank you, as always, for being a wonderful and delightful, wife and guest.
I love
in that order.
I love the Daverhood, you know.
It's Daver with a
Daver?
Daverhood. Like Dave.
Daver? Who's Dave?
Who's Dave?
Oh, you?
Yeah, thank you.
Is that the name you're using these days?
Well, yeah. Hell, I've got bills that are outstanding in New York. I'm under another name here. I'm incognito.
I thought after the FBI. I'm sorry, honey.
Okay, we've got to end this segment now, so. Thank you, hon.
Goodbye, Mr. Smith.
We'll be back right after this.
Sponsor me, Dave's gone by. Run your ad, folks will buy. If you want to reach the public, sponsor me. Advertise on this program for incredibly reasonable rates with long-term discounts. See prices at davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511. Sponsor me. If you're wise on Dave's Gone By, you'll advertise. If you want to be successful, sponsor me. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this September 11th, 2009, 8 years later. So many things change. You know, you go in your day-to-day routine, and you figure, everything's basically the same as it was, and, people come, people go, people get sick, people die, people are born. But in a day-to-day thing, most of the time it doesn't change. And yet, if I look back where I was 8 years ago, trying to imagine that I would be living near a college campus in northern Colorado, I don't know if I could have even envisioned that back in 2001 when, the world changed. The world changed and nothing changed. And I guess that's the way it is day-to-day in life. But I wanted to mention that because even though I'm in Colorado, we're making this a pretty New York-y sort of a show. We're talking Inside Broadway, I was talking about 9/11, of course, and now I've got to kick them when they're down. I have to kick the New York Mets when they're down. I stopped being a real Met fan 2.5 years ago, and I really give props to the folks who even now stuck with them. See, I was a Met fan and became a Met fan in the lousy years, in the early 1970s, after 1969. I was only 5-6 years old when the Mets won the Super Bowl, and I don't know why. The World Series. Thank you. A little bit of aphasia there. I was a kid, and it didn't matter to me that the Mets weren't in the pennant most of the time. They weren't anywhere. They were playing 470 ball. I just put on the TV. I heard Ralph Kiner and Lindsey Nelson just doing the Mets broadcast. I liked watching the Mets play. I collected baseball cards. It was fun. And when they got to the World Series with Oakland in the late 70s, that was amazing. I was excited for that. And I stayed a fan through the rotten years, the good years, because they went out there, they played baseball, they won, they lost. I rooted. I was a fan. And, of course, then came the 1980s, those exceptional years when they probably should have won three World Series instead of one. I mean, they were a terrific team, and they just had the bad luck to be terrific in the one or two years before they started the whole wild card thing. Because had the Mets had a wild card slot, they would have done it. But they win something like 95 games a year, and they would have the bad luck that one team would win 97 games a year and go on into the playoffs. Anyway, I went through those years, and then the years when they tumbled back down again into the 1990s, and ups and downs. So when I say that I am no longer a Met fan, understand that I rooted for them in a big and somewhat rabid way for 2-3 decades. And then came that year, 2.5-3 seasons ago now, when they were good and they were rolling and it was fun to watch them, and they had Beltran and David Wright and, you know, a good, good team, and seemed absolutely destined for the playoffs. And then, you know, assumedly getting into the World Series, whether they win the World Series or not, you know, only one team can be the best of the best all year. But, you know, just to be good enough, get there and make the home team, make your home fans proud. And, of course, we all know what happened. That collapse. The entire team. 17 games to play, 7-game lead, and they didn't make it. They just lost game after game, and it didn't seem they were even, they didn't care. It didn't seem like they were trying, and it just absolutely broke my heart. Not that I'm this rabid kind of sports fan to begin with, but I was like, you know what? It's one thing to lose, because not only one person can win, and it's one thing to have a bad luck streak, but it's quite another to just go along, accept, you know, ACCEPT, accept losing, and just, you know, shrug your shoulders and, oh, we lost. Oh, we didn't make the playoffs. Oh, well. Ho-hum. Oh, we lost another game. Oh, our pitcher collapsed. Whatever. And that's the way it was in that season. And I would have forgiven them. I really would have. Had they shaken up the entire team that summer. If they had sent everybody out. You know, you all are responsible for this really disgusting collapse. Willie Randolph, even the players that I like, David Wright, the good to the bad to the ugly, just keep nobody, divest. But instead, they said to themselves, oh, well, you know, stuff happens, we'll keep the vast majority of the team, because the team was basically good for the whole year, and we'll make a couple of little trades, and then, boy, we'll really be primed to make the playoffs next season. Well, we all know what happened this season after that. They didn't shake up anything, and it happened again. There were 4 games in front, with 17 games to go last year, in 2008. And they lost it again. Well, it served them right. It served them right for not junking Willie Randolph immediately. It served them right for not junking most of the team immediately. And now, this is the season where it all came to roost. This is the season where everybody realizes they're a stinky team. They don't have any kind of cohesion. Now, what's interesting is everybody says, well, it's the injuries. The injuries, they're playing hurt. They're injured. Oh, boo-hoo-hoo. All their best players are sitting in a hospital. And there is some truth to that. I think, you know, basically, down the stretch, as I record this episode of the show, the Mets are at something like 450 or 460. They're about 15, 16 games under 500. Had they had their healthy players, I would reckon that they would not be that bad. They might be 3 games over or under 500. Still not playoff worthy or in contention. Because they never would be. Not with the lineup that they've got. Not with the people and the mix and the poison that they somehow have in there that they've had for 3 years. And so, you know, the Mets are luckiest people. The upper management of the Mets are so lucky they've had the injuries this year, because they can blame everything on that. They can say, oh, we're losing. Oh, we're not trying. Well, you know, all our best people are on the bench. We're not supposed to win. You know, meanwhile, here I am in Colorado, not yet a Rockies fan. I haven't lived here long enough. I can't claim that. But they're playing incredibly injured, and they've won 9 out of 10. And they're gonna make the playoffs. You know, they're in a dogfight with the Florida Marlins, but they're staying on top. And they're almost as banged up and as bruised as the Mets. It's just their players aren't as famous or quote-unquote good who are on the DL. So, you know what? I'm no longer a Mets fan. I'm sorry to say that. But I also have to say, Mets, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. And if at some point, even though I'm no longer living in New York, you really decide to get your act together, not that you just start winning ball games, but you really clean house, and you prove that you just want to play good baseball again, then maybe I'll consider saying, meet the Mets, greet the Mets. But right now, it's fine by me if everybody and their brother and their mother beats the Mets. Anyway, we've got to close out the show. I'll be right back with the end of Dave's Gone By for this week, right after this.
What's black and white and red all over? Photocopies made at Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Any job that you have, including black and white copies, and they've got a brand new color copier, great quality, good prices, wonderful family that has owned Hewlett Minuteman Press since the 1970s. So check them out, 516-569-5577, Hewlett Minuteman Press. They're the kings.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Thank you so much for spending part of this September 11th with me. It just feels good to be, as I said, doing something like this on a day that has so many other things attached to it. But, thank you for attaching yourself to this program, as you all have for the past 316 episodes of the show. It really, that's another thing that makes me feel good, of your support and your listenership. If you want to contact me and tell me what you thought of the show or make suggestions for future episodes, it's davesgoneby@aol.com. That's D-A-V as in Victor, davesgoneby@aol.com. And, of course, please check our website, davesgoneby.org, for all information about the show. There's photos, there's the whole history of the program, and, of course, you can listen to virtually every episode we ever did of the show for free at any time just by going to davesgoneby.org into the archive section. You can download them as podcasts or just stream them right along on your computer, davesgoneby.org. Thank you so much to the sponsors of Dave's Gone By, Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island, 1315 Broadway, to be specific. 569-5577 is their phone number, 569-5577, that's area code 516. And the other number to remember is that you get 10% off any job, big or small. Minuteman Press, they're the kings. Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party decorating needs. 516-797-3229 is their number. 797-3229. Shouldn't your event be fancy schmancy? Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. 1 year of issues, 12 monthly issues, usually is something like $175. It's a journal. People pay a lot for it. But you, as a Dave's Gone By listener, can pay a lot less. Just go to davesgoneby.org for more information about that, or performingartsinsider.com for more information about the magazine. Please check also totaltheater.com. We just posted our 2,500th theater review, because there are theater reviews from all over the world, from Broadway, from Italy, from Turkey, from Paris. Plus, we have feature stories about the theater, totaltheater.com. And you can still catch episodes of Shalom Dammit on YouTube. They're all cut up into pieces, because YouTube only allows you 10 minutes. But you can see entire episodes, all 10 in the series, of Rabbi Sol Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour, Shalom Dammit. And I think we might be hearing from the rabbi on the next episode of this program, because we'll be doing it around the Jewish holidays. So check out that. Want to give a shout-out to Jeff Goodman, my co-host on the episodes of the shows we were doing on Long Island. Hope to get him back on the radio here very, very soon. Right now he's in Las Vegas, so hope he's having a terrific time. Also a shout-out to Athena Reich. Congratulations on her new CD release, which is out October 10th. She'll be doing a CD premiere party at the Sidewalk Cafe in New York. And you can see her new video, Love is Love, on YouTube. And it features her and her girlfriend, who are both here on the show about 2 years ago. Also, shout out to Uta Lemper, who was just added to the lineup at Joe's Pub. She'll be coming in December 10th through the 13th. And another guest on the show, Issa, will be doing Joe's Pub December 11th and 12th. Also, shout out to Dave J. He's still doing his show, John Paul George Ringo, his one-man show where he plays all the Beatles. That's at 13th Street Rep, 50 West 13th Street, playing from September 25th through October 10th. Thank you so much, as always, to my wonderful parents, Mom and Dad Lefkowitz, to my in-laws, Mom and Dad Weil, and, of course, to my beloved, adorable, and wonderful wife for taking part in this episode, this Just Another Day episode of Dave's Gone By. So we're going to go out with a song that pursues that theme by Loudon Wainwright III. He actually wrote it in 1994 with his thoughts about Sarajevo, but it certainly fits about September 11th, and it's called Pretty Good Day so far, and I hope yours is. It's time to leave the neighborhood now, but we'll be back very soon for the 317th episode of the show. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night, pretty good days, and gone by.
Through to the dawn, I flipped a switch and the light went on. I got out of bed and I put some clothes on. Was a pretty good day so far. I turned the tap, there was cold, there was hot. I put on my coat to go to the shop. I stepped outside and I didn't get shot. It was a pretty good day so far. I didn't hear any sirens or explosions. No mortars coming in from those heavy guns. UN tanks, I didn't see one. It's a pretty good day so far. No snipers in windows taking a peek. No people panicked running scared through the streets. I didn't see anybody without arms, legs, or feet. Pretty good day. There was plasma bandages and electricity. Food, wood, and water. And the air was smoke-free. No camera crews from ITV.